And it hits me, oh my gosh, this is that triangle.
You know, there's explanation for everything that occurred in the Rendlesham Forest incident that doesn't involve aliens at all.
It was completely silent. It comes right over our heads.
He saw a classic flying saucer, really, standing in a clearing.
He turned over to my father and held his hand, and he looked in his eyes and he said, "We're not alone."
Welcome to Podcast UFO with Martin Willis and Michael Lauck. Please remember to visit the website, podcastufo.com. Check out the latest blogs and forums. And while you're there, don't forget to like our very active Facebook page.
Hello and welcome to the show. I'm Martin Willis, your host. And Michael Lauck will be joining us. Well, actually, he'll be joining us right now. How are you doing, Michael?
Great. How are you?
Good. You didn't know I was going to pull you in this quickly, did you?
No, I was just taking a drink when you said that again.
Okay, yeah. Well, today's podcast is number 71, and it is with, well, it's actually with no one. We don't have a guest. We actually have Mark Sima coming up from Beijing, China. He's our China correspondent. He'll be with us a little later on. We had a couple of very interesting things happened this week. We had a couple of recordings backlogged that we were ready to post one of them, and neither one of them worked. I'll talk a little bit more about that later. Also, because of our talk last week about the Pascagoula incident, we were going to have Calvin Parker on, but he is undergoing some medical treatment right now. I want to read a quote from an email he sent me since the AP story broke about the 40th anniversary. Okay, here it is right here, quote, "After the AP tracked me down at my home and ran the story, my whole life has been turned upside down. People I don't even know are showing up at my door at all hours of the day. I don't even know how they get my address. Some are nut jobs, and I can't get rid of them without threatening them. The mailman has to hand deliver the mail because there's so much," unquote. So he's going through a really tough time. So if you happen to be listening and you're one of these people attacking him, please back off. He's a nice guy. And before we get into other things here, I want to give one more shout out. I gave a few last week to Rainier Cardon. Hopefully I pronounced that okay. He's one of the Facebook fans that we have. I'm not even quite sure if he listens to the show, but I wanted to give a shout out because he's very supportive on our Facebook page. Last week, you may remember, we talked about the Russian meteorite. So I have a clip coming up here hosted by Stuart Gary. It's a show called Star Stuff, a really good show. I recommend it. And so I'm going to play that clip now.
Russian divers have pulled a half-ton meteorite, believed to be from the famous Chelyabinsk meteor, from the murky depths of a lake in the Urals. The recovery operation came 8 months after a piercing streak of light lit up the morning sky in the central Russian region of Chelyabinsk, generating a ground-shaking shockwave which smashed windows and toppled buildings, injuring some 1,500 people. The event, which was recorded on car dash cams and security cameras across the city, made worldwide news and also triggered the American nuclear blast detector system in Alaska. The meteor broke apart into myriad of pieces, some just centimeters wide, the remnants of which scientists are still finding scattered across the remote region. A number of large chunks of debris were seen by witnesses to splash into a local lake called Lake Chebakul. In a recovery operation broadcast live on Russian television, divers entered the freezing waters of the lake and recovered a 1.5 meter wide rock, which they first wrapped in a special protective fabric while it was still underwater. The boulder was then pulled ashore and placed on top of a massive scale for the all-important weigh-in. However, that was an operation which quickly went wrong as several large chunks crumbled off. In fact, the scale itself then broke just after it hit 570 kilograms. Scientists involved in the recovery effort say the meteorite already had a fracture in it when they found it. They estimate the original mass of the rock at some 600 kilograms. They say it'll be some time before scientists can certify that the rock they pulled from the lake did indeed come from outer space. Divers have already recovered some 12 pieces from the lake since the February 15th incident. However, only about 4 or 5 of those rocks turned out to be real meteorites. Still, researchers at Chelyabinsk State University seem confident with their latest find. They believe this will be one of the largest fragments of the meteor and most likely one of the 10 largest meteorites ever recovered. Researchers believe the meteor probably weighed about 10,000 tons when it exploded a few kilometers in the air with a force equivalent to 30 Hiroshima-sized nuclear bombs. Scientists say an object that large usually approaches Earth only once every 3 or 4 decades. Chelyabinsk was once part of the Soviet Union's industrial heartland, but it's seen a dramatic slide in living standards of late. Local residents are now trying to use the meteor to draw tourists to their isolated part of Russia. A special council meeting made up of scientists and prominent residents this week urged the local government to erect a 6-story-tall statue in honour of the space rock. Wonder what that will look like. Media reports say the council's also hoping to set up special hiking trails for foreign tourists interested in visiting the lake and other spots where debris has been found.
Michael, what do you think about the Russians? They're pretty smart trying to capitalize on this meteor. They're going to build a monument and everything and trails. They know when to cash in on this type of stuff. What do you think about that whole thing?
Every little town, you know, every medium-sized town has to grab onto what they can to pull in extra dollars lately. I definitely don't fault them. That I really can't wait to see what the meteor sculpture looks like.
I know. I was trying to picture that.
Yeah. Like I think I might have created a meteor sculpture in the past without realizing it.
Possibly. Yeah, I don't know if it's going to be like broken windows around a rock or something, you know. I mean, what did they say? There was something like 30,000 broken windows or something like that. I can't remember the number. It was huge.
Right. You know what? A bunch of broken glass, that is a good idea. It's kind of a new Germanic arts kind of a thing, like breaking of the vessels or one of those sculptures. I like that. I think
plus it can be cool. Green, you know, recycling. Yeah.
Right, yeah, and dangerous.
Oh, yeah, dangerous. It's just like on Saturday Night Live, they used to, remember Dan Aykroyd used to say, broken glass, that's what we're selling kids, broken glass.
I'm not old enough to remember Dan Aykroyd being on Saturday Night Live.
You bastard. Okay. All right, so Michael, what is going on with the news this week?
Well, you know, it's another weird week that brings lots of stories, but nothing, no, you know, huge sightings or anything. But this first one I think is pretty interesting, and that is a new UFO hunting manual is being released. Haynes, who are famous for their aftermarket automotive repair guides, are offering a UFO investigations manual. Right now it is being sold in the UK, and it includes the common type of craft spotted and common flight paths over Great Britain. The manual will be released later this year in the United States and can be pre-ordered right now from Amazon.com for about $23.
Well, I think that's great. I think they should actually make a repair manual for UFOs. You know how they crash sometimes?
One of the articles I read said this was their first non-car manual. I thought they actually made a repair manual for the Starship Enterprise a few years ago, but that might have been Chilton's now that I think about it. But if anybody works in their cars out there, they're probably familiar with Haynes. Haynes guides kept my Volkswagen running all through college. I know that. And this should be an interesting book.
Well, I use Chilton's myself. But you know what I was thinking about? We should create a book called UFO for Dummies, you know?
You know, I think there might be one already.
Is there one?
I think the God, dummies I was, people
I was gonna
have
get,
one.
I was going to get Stephen Greer involved in everything. But, uh-oh, I'm going down the path of Stephen Greer again.
Already?
You know what happened last time, right? We got threatened.
What?
Yeah, we got threatened. You don't know? You didn't know that? I was carefully opening my mail for fear of anthrax and all that for a couple of weeks. But we're not really picking on Stephen Greer. We're just saying he could write the foreword to UFOs for Dummies. There's nothing. We're not really picking on him, are we?
If we're being threatened, I'm not.
Okay, so let's move on.
All right. 1,000 neighbors and counting. Scientists have now cataloged over 1,000 exoplanets, with about a dozen falling in the Goldilocks zone, which suggests they could support life. The growing body of cataloged planets not only helps us refine our planet-finding capabilities, it also helps us to refine some of the estimations used in the famous Drake equation, the mathematical formula which attempts to estimate the number of advanced civilizations that currently inhabit the universe. I know you're a big fan of the Drake equation.
Yes, I'm a big fan of the Drake equation. Just needs a little tweaking, that's all.
Well, we're going to start tweaking it now. I mean, for the first time, we can kind of say, you know, we have a percentage that what does that end up being? 1.2% of planets seem to fall in this habitable zone. And that's a much better estimation than we ever had before. I mean, when you think about it, you were giving me a little trouble because I'm not old enough to remember Dan Aykroyd on Saturday Night Live.
Just a little, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's not my fault that I'm as old as you. Mm-hmm. Definitely in that Piscopo Eddie Murphy zone. But
who?
When I – whatever. when I was a kid, oh, probably even when I was in college, I mean, we knew of no planets – outside of our solar system. When I was in, you know, public school, elementary school, all that, we had 9 planets. Right. And we've since disqualified one of them.
Yeah.
And now we have, you know, over 1,000 more that only in the past few years. That's really kind of amazing.
It really is. You know, I always feel bad for Pluto. You know, I mean, all this time was a planet and now it's rejected. But I guess there's some rocks out there, you know, further out that are probably even bigger than Pluto. So they just can't, you know, they can't substantiate calling it a planet.
I say bring back Pluto personally, but.
All right. I think we should do a White House petition on that one. Let's get Stephen Bassett involved in that. I'm picking on the Stevens today. I like Stephen Bassett. Anyway. Okay. So another thing out there a lot of people don't think of is, you know, some of these moons just in our own solar system are very mysterious and could actually possibly host life of some type, or it could have at one time. What I'm really saying here is that it is possible that some moons of all these planets are finding, you know, could also host life. Am I going too far out there? I might be.
No, that's entirely, a valid theory. I believe Titan, there are people who argue that there might be liquid water on it.
Right, under the ice.
Right. When you get to out a little bit, those larger planets in our own solar system, you know, their moons are pretty darn large when you think about it. So, Alien Abduction Support Group. After operating as a call-in hotline for years, the Starborn Support Group has had its first live meeting of experiencers in the Portland area. Founded by Audrey and Debbie Hewens, the group welcomed Travis Walton abduction witness Steve Pierce to their first meeting. In our show notes, we not only have a link to the Lewiston Sun Journal coverage of the first meeting, but also a link to the group itself.
That was, of course, the symposium that I went to there, but they're just publishing this in that paper. That's why you got a hold of that. So speaking of Audrey Hewens, she was one of the people that I had recorded with, as well as Yvonne Smith out in Southern California when I was out there. And both recordings had these really weird things happen to them. And it's really funny because both of them said the same thing, and that is they weren't surprised at all. And Yvonne Smith in particular, when I was actually in her office in La Cañada, California, I saw a graph on GarageBand that I was actually recording into that was really strange. So I stopped the recording and I went back, and it was almost like there was a chanting in the background. It was the strangest thing I ever heard. So anyway, both those recordings are gone and I'm rambling here. So let's move on with the news.
Okay. I'd like to remind everybody that the New England UFO Conference is this weekend. As we release on Friday, it will be tomorrow, Saturday. And, that'll be in, is it Leominster?
Leominster.
Leominster, Massachusetts.
You have to have the New England accent. It's Leominster.
Stanton Friedman, Kathleen Martin, Travis Walton, Steve Pierce, Robert Schroeder, and others will be speaking there. And there will also be a screening of The Hidden Hand. And yes, you will be there, right?
I'll be there. And please, if you're going to go, please say hi to me.
Are you going to wear a special hat? How can I identify you?
I will.
Podcast UFO shirt. Face tattoo.
No, I'll be the handsome, distinguished person there. Period. I'll edit that out.
I think you might want to.
No, I'm going to be up in the press area, but I also will have a table out and I'll have some. Oh, I don't know, maybe some brochures or something out there and something like that.
So everybody who goes, take your picture with Martin and put it on Facebook. To bring the news to a close this week, Skinwalker Ranch is finally being exploited. A new film based on the stories of the Skinwalker Ranch will be available on demand October 30th. The film appears to be a found footage style of horror film, and it is already marketing itself by inventing a missing researcher and spreading the story of his mysterious but completely made-up disappearance as if it was a real event.
Right. I watched the trailer. It looks like it's going to be a really good movie, but yeah, they really embellished a lot, according to the book I read. And speaking of the book and speaking of the author, George Knapp, I had a confirmation that he was going to be on our show, and now he's not returning emails. He's not responding to me on Facebook. So if anyone else out there has a connection with George Knapp, get him on the show. And also, while I'm begging for guests like George Knapp, who I'd really want to have on, I'm also looking to get James Fox on, if anyone knows how to get a hold of him. I'd really like to have him on the show. He has that movie coming out, 701. Are you familiar with that, Michael?
We did a story on it.
I guess you're familiar with it then. Yeah. It is 701, right?
I believe it is either 701 or I think it might be the 701.
Okay. And we can't Google anything while we're recording, so we'll just kind of leave it at that. So we have Mark Sima from Beijing, China, on the line with us right now. How are you doing, Mark?
I'm very well, thank you. Hi, Martin. Hi, Michael.
Now, it's 10 o'clock in the morning as we're recording, or almost 11 here. What time is it there?
It's 12 hours later, so I'm 12 hours ahead of you.
Since our last talk, has anything happened in China?
Yeah, well, since we've talked, not much has happened. I've been, of course, looking for news. What I noticed was a story from another university in another part of the country, in Jilin University, where a student said they have seen a bright light in the sky, and they have recorded it on the video. But there's no, I've not found the video itself. I've just seen a posting on a Chinese website, and that posting has been translated in English and can be found also in English. And it's a it's really what you see is what you have the story, but what you see, the picture you see are basically a student pointing at his the screen of his computer and showing a bright spot in the sky. So it's I don't know really what to think about it, but it was the noticeable story. So the university is located in the city of Changchun in the province of Jilin, and at night, beginning the first day, I'm not sure if it was the last days of September or the beginning of the first days of October, the student saw a bright light in the sky and called his friends because he didn't have the video, and the friends brought the video and they filmed it for 2 hours. And the lights were unmoving. It had three different colors. It's not clear what shape it had. It's more like a glowing light in the sky. And after some time, it receded deeper into the sky, or it just vanished after some time.
Wow!
So that's really really the story that we have in for the month of October. I'm sure there are others, but that's the one I could the relevant one I could find.
One of the things I was thinking about after we spoke last time was one of the areas of China that gets a lot of attention in American documentaries on UFOs or a lot of mentions are of some kind of secret pyramids that are supposedly in China but have been cordoned off by the government. And I was wondering if Mark had ever heard any of those stories or if that's kind of a purely Western myth that is bouncing around out here.
Yeah, I'm afraid I've never heard about it, but doesn't mean the story is not running here. But a secret pyramid? No, there's no suspicion, at least from the public, that you know the truth is hidden from the public. So what I can say is that apparently about half the Chinese believe in UFOs. According to some studies, I'm not sure how serious the studies are and how the poll was made. But if I ask around me, I get about half people saying yes, they believe in it. Half people say they don't know or they don't. So it's very much, again, I think the UFO phenomena here is there in the sense that it is believed by a big portion of the population. And we have a very wide press coverage of UFO events, worldwide UFO events, and when they happen here. And they are, you don't have the, I've not seen the debunker kind of articles, but again, I'm not able to see all the you know, the Chinese articles. But basically what I see in the press are, when there's no specific Chinese event, there is the continuous stream of world UFO news. So, you know, the last news about Peru, for example, or the new revelation about Area 51. And so this is being published here. So we have it all over the internet, on social media, but also the, you know, the more official press, just, you know, translated in English and reprint, rebroadcast those news. So the Chinese are very much in the loop of the informations that Michael summarizes every week and bring to the audience of your podcast. To a sense, the Chinese public is living at the same time than the rest of us, the rest of audiences worldwide. You know, if you are interested in UFOs and you're Chinese, basically you can read in Chinese more or less what you could read in English. I would say that's one comment I would like to make.
In your personal experience, then, when you talk to the Chinese that you come in contact with, and so you say many of them believe in UFOs, the ones that don't, how do they perceive the ones that do? I mean, I know in the West there can be a lot of ridicule, at least especially in America. Is there that sense in China that crazy people believe in UFOs, or is it something that it's just a different of opinion and that's that?
Actually, people can be sitting at the same table and having very different ideas about topics and have a very polite conversation and not trying to convince the other one. I mean, certainly in the States, but also in Europe, in my home country, we are very good at starting fights about many things, but that's not the way here. So people can debate, people can say, yeah, I'm interested in it, or I'm not interested in it, and this is why. It doesn't go further than that. There's less the idea of the truth. So what I believe is the truth, and the other person would believe in an opposite truth, and then there's a battle. This really doesn't happen here, and I think it's much more important to respect everybody's opinion and interest. Also, some people are just not interested in it because they say, well, maybe there's something high in the sky, but really doesn't, for the moment at least, doesn't impact my life today. So I'm much more interested about here and now, and what I can do to in my busy life to make it even better. They listen politely, and if they disagree, they just say they disagree or they're not interested, and that's okay.
The last time that you were on, Travis Walton was on the show, and he listened to the podcast, and he sent me a comment that he was hosting a group from Hong Kong. This is back on the 16th of September. I'm going to see him in another couple of days. I'll talk to him about that. But I was kind of surprised. This was in Huber, Arizona, where I believe Huber, Arizona, is actually where he showed up when he was supposedly dropped off after the abduction. And so I was kind of surprised to hear that the people from Hong Kong actually had an interest in the Travis Walton case.
Yes, it's interesting. I think there are a number of Western American books written about UFOs who are translated into Chinese and sold here and read avidly here, actually. If you go to, I don't know if you... You can go to our Amazon here, which is amazon.cn. Well, it's all written in Chinese, but if you just type UFO, you will see that a great number of books about UFO topics are sold to the Chinese public. So, and because those, you know, what we consider our UFO stories are being translated weeks after weeks, day after day, or weeks after weeks in the Chinese press. So people read about it, and if those polls are to be believed, half people believe in UFOs. So it's only natural that Chinese who are today great travelers, they are close, or they are the number one people traveling around the world today in terms of numbers. It makes sense that a number of them, when they travel abroad, would be interested to visit some people who are part of the UFO stories. What I've noticed when I go online here in Beijing, and I use I buy time to time some items on Amazon, right? We have a Chinese Amazon.cn. Is that if you type UFO in the search engine of Amazon, you see that there's a lot of items to UFO items to buy, actually. Some objects shaped like UFOs, some toys and so on, but also a number of books. And those are either non-fiction accounts of the UFO phenomenon written by Chinese or by foreigners. So, you know, some American bestsellers being translated into Chinese, and I think they do quite well. So a number of people are reading them, and there's some cases contemporary fiction, contemporary novels written about on the subject of UFOs, or the UFO is part of the storyline. And one, my favorite has been is also, you can read it in English. It's from a woman writer, a female writer called Guo Xiaolu. And her first novel was very entertaining. It was called the English-Chinese Dictionary for Lovers. It was a sort of a very funny account of a Chinese student going to London to get into a university, and her discovery of the West, and this, through the discovery of English. But in a 2009 novel, the title is UFO in Our Eyes. I think it has been turned into, or it's being turned into a movie. The main character is this sort of funny single woman in rural South China, and she's considered by her village past her prime, so she's sort of an odd figure, and everything for her change, and her relation with the village and her village change also the day she claims that she's seen a flying saucer, and then she recounts the story of the book is about the transformation of her life, but also the transformation of that small town that grows in size, in wealth, and all this really triggered by the UFO. It starts to attract tourists and attracts the media.
Now, one of the things that always comes to mind when we talk, and I always forget to ask you, is there any accounts of UFOs going back to ancient times?
I think this is a very interesting topic, and the short answer is yes. And the one of the earliest accounts, the most famous one, is the one by Shen Kuo. He's a statesman from the Song Dynasty. So he was a statesman, he was a scientist, he was a mathematician, he was an astronomer, meteorologist, geologist, poet, he was a musician, he was a historian. And he was the head official for the Bureau of Astronomy during the Song Dynasty. The Song Dynasty is roughly the 11th century. And towards the end of his life, he wrote a sort of a scientific compilation called the Dream Pool Essay. That's dated 1088. And in it, there are a number of very interesting documents. So, for example, Shen was the first to describe the magnetic needle compass for use for navigation, and you know, described by Neckham 100 years later. But also in the Dream Pool essays, you have the discovery of the concept of the true pole compared to the North Pole. And he made experiments, and he proved it, and he proved it and wrote about it in that Dream Pool essays some 400 years before we that concept is found again in Europe. So he's very much at the cutting edge of his time, and he has a passage in a chapter in this essay, which is called Strange Happenings, happenings in plural. And this is an account of an unidentified flying object. And he dates it, this is a recurrent event, he dates it from one of the emperor called Renzong, and from 1022 to 1063. And the description is like the object's like a bright pearl hovering over the city of Yangzhou at night. Hmm. And so it's been described by local inhabitants in Yangzhou is today in Jiangsu province. And so this is the, maybe I can read quickly the main description, because I think it is extremely contemporary actually. I don't know what you think about it, but this is an account from a poet who wrote after one of the sightings. And he said, when I opened its door and a flood of intense light like sunbeams darted out of it, then the outer shell opened up, appearing as large as a bed with a big pearl the size of a fist illuminating the interior in silvery white. The intense silvery white light shot from the interior was too strong for human eyes to behold, and it cast shadows of every tree within the radius of 10 miles. The spectacle was like the rising sun, lighting up the distant sky and woods in red. Then, all of a sudden, the object took off at a tremendous speed and descended upon the lake like the sun setting.
Wow.
So that's an excerpt of this 11th century description from Shen. And the pearl, he calls it a pearl, as he called it, this strange appearance returns. So the people started to erect a pearl pavilion on the wayside, so people can come on the boat and on that lake and hope to see the mysterious flying object.
Wow.
That's a striking sort of very ancient testimony, and I think a very beautiful one, and somehow very similar to today's account. I don't know what both of you think about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I know you're a teacher in Beijing. Do any of your students know about your book, The Texas Lights, and that you have an interest in UFOs?
Yes, I'm teaching in one of the main language universities of Beijing. Yes, they do know. They do know, of course. And I think some of them have been interested in it, and some of them have read it. And the reaction has been good overall. People are pleased that I'm using my free time during my vacation to do some writing, and it seems to be perfectly okay that the big theme of the book is a sort of recount of the Stephenville mass sighting. So no, I got a lot of support, and not just from my students, but also from my colleagues who read the book, and not all of them, but some of them, and I had even, a big congratulations from one of them, and so It has been a great personal experience for me to go through with that topic and try to dig deep within myself what I thought about the topic. So this was a sort of a journey for me through fiction to figure out what was my ideas, or where would the UFO story would take me. And also, I have to say that ever since I've published Texas Lights, contacting you and your podcast, and I have to say I'm very grateful because you were the first one that accepted to do an interview with me, and that was so I'm forever grateful for that, Martin. Oh. And also, I learned a lot about the UFO community by just speaking about my book in different forums, and so I've been educating myself on the topic of UFOs after I published the Texas Lights, and getting to know a little bit better people who know much more about the topic than me.
I love having you on as the China correspondent. It's always fun talking to you.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Martin. Thank you, Michael.
It's always good to talk to you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Get some rest.
So, Michael, I have Nick Redfern's going to be on next week. He's going to be talking about his new book, which is called For Nobody's Eyes Only, Missing Government Files and Hidden Archives That Document the Truth Behind the Most Enduring Conspiracy Theories. I'm wondering if UFOs is part of this. I was contacted by his publisher. Do you know anything about Nick Redfern? I know that a lot of people think highly of him, and a lot of people have been contacting me about him.
Never heard of him.
Okay.
Well, you know, Nick is obviously a very well-known figure in the field, not just of UFOs, but of quote-unquote paranormal subjects in general. He's written books on cryptozoology and the Men in Black, his alternative version of Roswell, or alternate explanation, the NASA conspiracies, I believe that was one of his titles too. I mean, he's all over as far as topic matter, and he's, you know, he ends up in quite a few documentaries and television shows as well. So he is a pretty knowledgeable guy. It should be a really good interview.
I think so. Now, do you know the thing behind the alternate Roswell?
I hope that I'm not speaking out of turn, and I am pretty sure it was him who put forward the theory that it was a secret test craft of ours that had some kind of deformed children inside of it.
Wow. I'm going to have to ask him about that. So, Michael, you know, getting back to what we were talking about when we first started the show, me picking on Dr. Stephen Greer and then getting, you know, sort of a threat and then a couple of nasty comments. You know, how I feel about the show, I don't know how you feel. You know, I consider you a partner in the show. And how I feel about it is if someone is not happy with what we're saying, just unplug your iPod and go away. How do you like that?
Well, here's my thing. I do believe that there are UFOs. I personally believe that they are, that at least some of them are some kind of intelligently controlled craft. I don't think that because I believe in UFOs, I have to believe in every UFO story. And there are people who I think are legitimately dishonest. There are people that I think are out to take money from people. And I don't see where I need to respect them. If you are selling trips to see invisible UFOs, things like that, I am going to have a distrust of you. And just because I believe in UFOs, I don't feel obligated to believe everything. And I believe part of our job on the show is to take an editorial position and draw a line and say this is what we're willing to intellectually invest in or not invest in. And kind of like Mark was saying, just because I choose not to wholeheartedly believe some sort. I'm not necessarily calling people liars. You know, I can respectfully say maybe there's an alternate explanation to a lot of things. You know, and then there are a few people that, like I said, I think are basically taking people's money. And I don't feel bad about making fun of that.
Calling them out?
I'm going to stop short of specifically maybe calling people out because some of those people are very lawyer happy.
Yeah. Well, I got an email from Peggy this morning in Vegas. I guess Charles Hall is speaking about the tall whites. He was in the military, but still... I think he's way out there. And so I wrote her back and said, you know, I should have him on just to hear what he has to say. And then sometimes I feel like having people that are way out there on just so I can confront them. And you and I had talked about doing something like that before. There are some people that do cause a little bit of damage in other people's lives. I don't think in particular Charles Hall does, but his stories are pretty far-fetched.
Right. And that doesn't... Like I said, that doesn't necessarily mean that he is lying. It's just going to take a little bit more proof in the case of something like that. For me to, like I said, intellectually invest in something. When it comes to these personal experiences, you know, people start to take it personally. I mean, that's natural. And unfortunately, I think a lot of experiencers, especially, but just... UFO enthusiasts in general kind of see that it's an all or nothing game. You have to believe it all or you don't believe it at all. And I definitely don't see that. I mean, there's too much contradiction in the field. You can't believe everyone. And people with conflicting stories aren't necessarily government agents. And then, like I said, there's another subgroup who are just really out to make a buck at this point. And they're probably the most dangerous of all.
Yeah. Actually, the kind of the threat that I was talking about that I got, someone that was very upset, and that particular person falls right into the category you're talking about, someone that believes it all and wants to believe it all and then is angry at people that don't believe it all.
If you remember back to the X-Files, way back now, 20 years ago, the poster that came out of it that was on Fox Mulder's mm-hmm. wall that they made part of the beginning of it is it wasn't a picture of a UFO and I believe. It wasn't a picture of a UFO and believe or even the truth is out there, which was the end of the opening sequence. The poster said, I want to believe.
Right.
And yeah. That's one of those things that can be read two ways. It's, you know, like I want to believe, but I don't quite. Mm-hmm. I want this to be true, but I'm not seeing it yet. Or it can be that I want to believe everything that comes down the pike. I have pre-chosen if you are going to tell me about aliens and flying saucers, I believe you no matter what you say. You know, if you try to convince me that Muppets are actually aliens, good enough for me.
They're not?
Yeah. I saw it in a cartoon, so it must be true.
Yeah. Right. All right, Michael, we'll see you. We'll be on with Nick Redfern next week.
And we can talk about the hate mail we get. This week.
Absolutely. All right. Talk to you next week.
All right. You have a great week.
You too.
Thank you for listening to our show. And please remember to check out our website, podcastufo.com, for the latest blogs and forums. We will be back next week. Thanks again. And remember, keep your eyes to the sky.